Please continue with your meal, and we want to make this a very informative and informal meeting so that we can ask our questions and move forward with this evening. If you recall, this year I contracted with Chatsby for three services. We did the employee opinion survey, we did the staffing review, and we did compensation. Our maintenance of our compensation. So right now we've completed two of the three. We've completed the employee opinion survey. I did send out that in your packets, so I'm hoping that you have an opportunity to review what our employees are saying about the district. And basically, I'm not going to read this whole thing to you, but I'm just going to highlight some of the things that caught my eye that I think were interesting. And as you've heard, some of the issues that are going on throughout the district and things, you know, as you've heard, you're going to see how some of that bubbles up to the top in their comments here. Basically, this employee opinion survey was taken in November of 2013. And then results were compared with the employee opinion survey that was done during the same time last year. So this will be year two that we've done this. And I know when Dr. Gadaris came on board, he asked about the surveys, what are we doing, you know, can we do a trend analysis, what is it saying year after year. So for in the interest of continuity, we're going to continue doing this report probably couple of more years and see what it trends and what it looks like. The purpose of the survey was to assess employee attitudes and level of satisfaction with their jobs and work conditions. The survey information was used to assist district leaders, which is, you know, information that is valuable to us in understanding how employees perceive specific issues and reveal the general level of job satisfaction among employees. I can tell you that the survey, 900 emails were given to them, so they sent out the survey. This is done confidential. Employees can write in whatever. The responses go directly to TASB. So there's no way TASB doesn't reveal to district officials, you know, this employee is saying. They take the comments and incorporate them into this report. So they don't. The employees can be very truthful and honest in assessing, you know, how they feel about the districts and their comments. So 900 people were invited to participate. A total of 673 completed and submitted the questionnaires. Now, in comparison to last year, we had a response rate of 75% this year compared to 81% last year. So we had a much higher participation rate last year than we did this year. Throughout the survey, and this was at all levels of jobs, custodians, bus drivers, teachers, administrators, so everyone had the opportunity to participate in this survey. Major findings, job satisfaction and engagement overall. The employees here at Canutillo responded favorably regarding their own job satisfaction, and this was very much the same as they responded the last year, that they cited meaningful work was listed as the most important factor that contributes to job satisfaction. So that is very good to hear, that our employees are satisfied with their work. As far as working conditions, the majority of the respondents expressed satisfaction with the working conditions. Learning climate, it says, although opinions about campus leadership declined 11% since the last survey, a strong percentage of those who responded, which was 72%, still feel that their principal is an effective leader. They agreed that the principal treats employees with respect and provides information they need to do their jobs. So that decline in comparison to last year, there's a decline there, but overall, people are still feeling satisfied with their campus leadership. Throughout the report, you're gonna see graphs, the demographics that tells you the percentages of employees by job type that responded. And, you know, you can look at and review those graphs on your own. Well, another point under the working conditions, like I said, this is an interesting point. It says, as in 2012, nearly all employees feel safe working in their homes. So there's a sense of security. And of course, again, you know, with everything that we've done in that field, we're, you know, bringing on SROs, bringing on additional security at the high school. So, you know, those things that have been done and approved by the board is giving them that sense of security in that we're doing something as a district to make our employees feel safe. Relationship with coworkers, levels of agreement about the supportive environment and willingness to help each other were nearly identical to the previous year survey. Positive attitudes about coworkers were among 87%, more feeling a sense of teamwork and support from other employees. And this is one of the things that I use today in bringing on hopefully a new employee to our district. And salary is by far important, I think it is, but it is not the most important thing. You know, we're looking at working conditions, we're looking at teamwork, we're looking at the environment that we have here at Sunny Field as being very positive. So it is, as an employer, I think it's a very desirable quality that we want to have in attracting new employees to our district. A couple of other comments that I just want to point out under curriculum and instruction, basically, there were questions under curriculum and instruction that only the teachers, if they click on the survey, and at the back of that you'll have the survey questions that were given. If they click their job title as being a teacher, then there were only questions that were given to the teachers. So they participated in only those questions regarding curriculum and instruction and student discipline support. And like I said, if you look at the survey, I provided the questions at the end of the documents that you have. What I do want to go over, and this one I will...
Do you have the exact amount of people that responded to the total survey? Like now you said with the teachers, how many teachers responded in comparison to
last year? Or just...
And could you tell me what happened?
There's demographics.
I came from.
Yes, in the graphs it tells you the number of participants by education. So I can break it down.
Every department and every.
We can break it down by education, the number of participants. One of the areas in this report that I found very interesting were the comments and suggestions for improvement. And so these are comments that were offered by the employees. Some of them, of course, you know, we can use for next year. I believe somewhere in here I read about the survey. We did it in November. We did it in November last year. Some of them are saying, well, maybe we should do it later in the year to give them a little bit more time to work either with new administrators or new coworkers, so they could form a better opinion. So that would be something that we could take a look at for next year. But basically, I'm going to read some of them here to you. It says, the most frequent comments were complaints related to the management style of their supervisor. The majority of the complaints were about using intimidation and threats, treating employees with disrespect, and treating employees inconsistently, including failing to address inappropriate behaviors of assistant principals and other employees in leadership positions, not providing support with problems and failing to give clear direction were also mentioned more than once. According to this, there were 53 comments regarding such attitudes and input that was given. 33 comments included accolades for the district and other employees. People generally commented on how they enjoyed working in the district and the support they received from the coworkers. 13 comments are about insufficient or inequitable pay, primarily pay for instructional aides. And that is something that we've been hearing throughout for the last couple of years about instructional aides. And a lot of our instructional aides now are either degreed or certified. And so, again, they're applying for positions that don't require that. However, it is a stepping stone into the classroom. It is a stepping stone for them to be teachers. And there is a lot of work I'm finding out as I've gone to some of the campuses and these instructional aides and the loads that they're helping out with the students. So during our compensation review, when later this month when TASB comes in, we will be looking at how we can address some of the issues with the instructional aides.
People that gave in a comment or that kind of thing, where it said 53 of them commented, were we able to know if it was an elementary campus or it was a secondary campus? Do we know?
No.
It's just general.
It's just general. They're telling you how many comments. Now, I can tell you when you break it down by how many people participated or the location, the highest participation rate was from the high school. So that is the highest group of folks at per location that participated in the survey. So the whole thing here is, like I said, it's confidential. It's supposed to be anonymous. People can come out and, you know, be truthful and honest in their responses. So you're not going to be able to track it down to an individual. And that's why this is, you know, an efficient tool for us because it's done by a third party, and they don't have to be worried about, you know, they're going to find out who said what.
We're not going to intimidate Brent and them.
There's also common concerns about clear and timely communication between district level leadership and departments or campuses were mentioned by 7 respondents. Comments were about increasing workloads, and I think overall as a district, you know, we're in that funny stage where, you know, we're not large, but we're not small either, and employees are wearing many, many hats within their departments, and you know, some of them are doing more than, or asked to do more than what is required of them, and everybody has, you know, come forth and done that. Other common themes repeated was student discipline support, curriculum and instruction, misuse of district resources, rude treatment by central office staff. And we've tried continuously, you know, to train on the customer service piece. We've had training with the campuses and, of course, with central office. But I think this customer service is going to be a reoccurring theme over and over as a reminder to all our staff about customer service. Lack of recognition of the work performed by non-instructional support departments. Participants also offered suggestions. It's reevaluate class offerings and scheduling and place students based on abilities. Gather input from teachers on staff development. Increase pay for classroom aides. Reevaluate pay structures for long-term employees so that they are paid more than newly hired employees. Expand facilities to include a remodeled cafeteria that allows students to get their food quicker. Arrange for on-campus after-school care programs for children of employees. And I think they mean that to be free of charge, because I believe that one of the campuses, we have the Y, and of course, if you're going to have your children participate in that after-school program, there is a fee. So probably means that
no cost. Why is it only at one of our campuses?
I don't think that, I think everybody has had the opportunity to sign up, but I believe that not all the campuses, you know, necessarily need it. And then at some with the Y, you have to have a certain level of participation. So if you don't have that many parents using that or employees using it, then they won't have the program at the campus.
And it's probably because of, I guess, people that can't afford it in the other campuses. I don't know, it's just something that there was a lot of discussion on the after-school programs, especially, you know, and probably those areas where they can't afford it or we don't have one, is probably what's more needed, because those are the ones that probably, you know, go home and at the same time, they could probably be doing extracurricular activities instead of, you know, trying to get in trouble. There was discussion on that this past weekend, so I don't know, it's just.
Martha, do you have any input on the after-school programs?
No, it's just like you said, it's a participation level that the Y won't commit to. I can look into it and see.
I'm just saying that maybe in the future internally, we, as a district, would want to look into it. Let's say like Westway and, I mean, Diana, that importance in those campuses to have somebody just after school where we could, you know, provide whether it's some type of fun activities, but maybe some instruction. It's something that, I don't know, I'm interested. I don't know if the rest of the
like after school activities, but in essence, it's
maybe
child
internally,
care.
Yeah, like, you know, an after school's activities coordinator, maybe, you know, some students from UTEP that don't have classes, but at the same time, we could provide some type of, you know, framework so that way we could provide after-school opportunities for our kids so that way they're not out in the streets and, you know, stuff like that.
Or home alone.
Yeah, or home alone. But, so, just food for thought.
Like, even have a tutorial or help with their homework that way when they get home.
And they could have access to our PE stuff, so, like, let's say one day, you know, wall, that type of stuff, that it gets them out of trouble.
Like intramurals where it's like, you know,
like every child is different, you know, so yeah. There'll be different needs for different children.
I can certainly discuss that with Mr. Escobedo Jose and see if he has any suggestions or, you know, or something. I can talk
but about I think that would be something good for the district and good for our kids. Because I think probably that's probably just at Damian, right? And that's been at Damian since I was there.
I know they have it at GPS.
GS and
the Y.
So it's you know where they're able, parents are able to afford that extra that it might be.
And at CES, they have the after school, the Boys and Girls Club. So
yeah, they
some of it it's based on versus Davenport. I mean, there's not a high need because the parent working versus the
well, there's probably more of a high need if a parent is not able to afford or not knowledgeable of that. And if we could get those kids to, you know, become active after school.
An activity versus the need for after school child care are different. Like we can look at providing activities in a room, intramural. But the YMCA is more of a child care.
Yeah. It'll sort of, you know, provide those kids an opportunity instead of running the streets. I remember when I was running the streets. So
yeah, like I would deal with different things.
And it is just that when they get pregnant, it's between 4 and 6 in the afternoon.
Lori, you'll have your bed.
I'm too honest to God, it's a that kind of thing.
That's very specific.
It is an absolute fact. Between 4 and 6, the kids get home. Oh, I don't know what to do. Look at sex.
We're here.
Yeah, it's so true.
She just locked it down between the night.
That might be a good.
Might be a good deterrent. Really?
Yeah. Okay.
I'll look and see if there's options or, you know, create a program of some type.
So a couple of other comments to wrap up. It said hold administrators accountable for modeling appropriate professional behavior. Provide teachers with an opportunity for input before selecting and purchasing instructional materials. Fill vacant positions in a timely manner. And then, of course, you know, we talk about this over and over in HR. What can we do to move these positions faster? You know, but a lot of times it's not all in our hands. You know, we've got the theory framing, we've got the background check, we've got, you know, so some of those things delay in processing. But we are trying. Incorporate peer reviews in the performance evaluation process for nurses. Conduct the survey later in the year. This is a way so employees have more time to get to know new staff members before responding. So that's certainly something that we can look at for next year. Improve the lunch menu to appeal to more students, thereby reducing waste from unneeden food.
The same thing 3 years ago.
And clean classroom floors on a more frequent and regular basis. Yes.
I have a question, Rachel Menas.
Yes, ma'am.
One, provide teachers with an opportunity for input before selecting and purchasing instructional materials. That's policy. And so, Dr. Galavis, if that is not happening, we're in violation of our own, well, not even our own policy, it's legal policy.
Well, and it is happening. We did have just recently the instructional materials, Mr. Muscle had,
okay, so maybe later in the year this is.
So, and he's been talking about that. I think he's got an agenda item where he will bring that forth and explain the process and what happens during that process.
Okay.
Of course, you know, many times if there's a teacher that didn't get the book they wanted or they selected, a lot of times I can say something, but the group as a whole can override my wishes and what I get. So I know he's got an agenda item coming up in one of our meetings, and he will be explaining that process too. But overall, I mean, this is the opinion survey that we had for this year, and I wanted just to share that with you before I turn it over to Ms. Kirk and her presentation on the staff review. Any other questions?
What do we pay for this each year?
I believe it is. I will double check, but I believe it's like $3,500.
Okay. And that's for everything, for
yes.
The survey.
Yes.
Okay.
It hadn't changed from year to year. Maybe a little bit the cost.
It hadn't changed. As a matter of fact, I will go back and look at the deal exactly, and if you want, I'll send you that information in your price packet. But I will tell you what it cost last year, and then of course.
I mean, it's good information. I'm just wondering, I mean, you're a professional here, so you're obviously getting your information back from us. Guy, the department heads, obviously.
Well, I guess, it's pretty much like the one on the instructional aides I've been hearing, for the past couple of years.
It's just verified.
And so now, it's bubbled up to the top where, we do need to look at it. I've talked to TASB about it, and it is on the radar for when they come in to do the compensation study later this month. So we have sent out all of the information. They have it. They're coming back at the end of the month to meet with the HR staff. We're going to be looking at all of that and see what proposals for this year, and of course, pending our budget and how that works out, and so that we can come to the board and make those recommendations that we need to do to keep our salaries competitive. I think we've done a good job the last couple of years. I think that in talking to Dr. Galavis, he wants to remain competitive and not lose that edge that we currently have. So.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cornell.
Martha, there are a couple issues. One, do we have any evaluation on what competitive placing that we were with respect to instructional aides the last time? Or not?
As far as
specific as
compensation.
The pay for the
for instructional aides.
I can tell you what, yes, I can pull that information for what we did last year. And again, looking at our pay scales over the years. And so one of the reasons that I think that is starting to bubble up to the surface is because, as I said, our job market in El Paso is slow. And a lot of our graduates, like I said, if I go back and look, and I had the ladies run me a report and submit that to TASB as a result of the survey and things that we've been talking about, to see how many of our instructional aides, some of them have bachelor's, master's, some of them are certified. And so, like I said, they're using that position in some instances as a stepping stone to become a teacher in a classroom to get into the district. And so a lot of those now, even though it's not paid at a professional level, certainly I have, like I said, I even have certified people in working in those positions.
Very
That's wonderful.
And at the same time.
Good problem to have.
And at the same time, it helps us because the quality of the assistance and the instruction that they're receiving in the classroom is, you know, is phenomenal. I've gotten some really good comments about some of the performance of these aides. Also, like I said, we do have some that are certified. And so, you know, they're waiting. It's an opportunity for us to fill positions a lot quicker because, you know, we'll have, you know, position comes up. We do have special ed certified folks or degreed in special ed that are serving in these aid positions. So whenever we have something come up, you know, it's like, Mary, find me one of these and let's see if we can pop them into, you know, getting them to apply for a position. So from these pools, not only from our sub pool, but from the aides, these people can move up. And so we've been using those opportunities as they present themselves to do.
I just wanted to add that even though they're working as aides, that experience is not lost. Say they work two years as an aide, and then they get a contract as a teacher. Rather than starting them at 0 years, they start out at 2 years experience. So.
And they all know that?
I don't know if they know that, but we know that. We know where to place them.
No, I also want to say that our enrollment has increased. Have we looked at that too? Because let's say for an LTAC clerk, this is just that position that I'm throwing out there. We keep adding more responsibility. It's the same responsibility, but their workload has increased. Mm-hmm. And we added more staff to that.
So we're talking clerks.
Yeah, well,
so now we're done.
Well, yeah, but it's an LTAC clerk. It's a clerk, but how about the aides?
And when I'm talking, we haven't. And when I'm talking about aides, I'm talking about those that are in the classroom, you know, that are servicing students that are in the classroom that, you know, so those, and I guess right now when I turn it over to Ms. Kirk, we can talk about, you know, the instructional aides. This is a TASB workshop. You all will be getting credit for this workshop, and I think everybody signed the little form in front of us.
Yeah, one other question that I had about, for example, on page 16, where you were doing the participants at the suggestions. One of the suggestions was to expand facilities to include remodeled cafeteria. A remodeled cafeteria allows students to get their food quicker. Now, if we don't know the location of where these comments came from, how can we know which cafeteria they're talking about?
Exactly.
Or which campus?
How are we going to remedy this?
Well, if I had to guess,
let's spin the wheel.
Well, it could be the high school too.
Yeah, I would imagine high school.
Well, I think because
they said expanded cafeteria. Northwest doesn't even have a cafeteria.
Well, what they're talking about also is the timeliness as they go through the line.
Yeah.
You know, the bottlenecks, the long lines, and of course that problem we do have at the high school. Even though I've heard that they've revamped how they serve the food, I've not been out there, so I don't know, but I know that they did something to try and reduce the waiting time for the students in the lines.
What I can add to that, I know Dr. Galaviz worked with Ms. Alcedo or requested that she provide how do we get this, you know, speed up, and I know that she's got several menu options for the kids, and so in the past, the students would just, you know, line up in front of the entry to the serving line, you know, so there was 4, 5, 6 serving lines. I know that with the new administration, he wanted, like at the bank, where you kind of go through the long line and you wait in front until you pick your entry, your destination, once you get to the front of the line. I know that Ms. Salcedo recommended, I understand your logic as to why you want to have more control in the line, and opted or referred or suggested, how about opening the outside lines, you know, direct, and then maybe the, you know, so she gave an option to where we facilitated more options in line instead of one long line where the kids had to wait. But I believe the administration felt that the...
No, he opened up two lines. But I want to be careful to say, this is a comment.
Oh, I hear you, but we've been hearing it for the last three or four years.
Yes, we've been hearing it for a while.
But you know, I mean, because my kids go, right?
Yeah.
And I ask them, how's the food?
Good.
Right? And so if they comment it's good, someone says it's bad.
Yeah, but they're comparing it to Round Rock.
I'm getting in touch with chicken every meal.
And it varies from campus to campus, too. So. And they're both in the same campus, right?
But I mean, your children. Yeah. So I just, you know.
Miss Juan.
And my daughter attends the high school, and probably, you know, the 5 days, I pick her up after school every day, and about 3 days, she's in a bad mood, and I tell her, what's wrong, honey? And she said, I didn't have a chance to eat because she didn't have time to get her food, or the food, the quality of the food, they just don't.
It has to be improved.
Yeah. I think that's something that I think recommend, Doc, that we take a look at. I'd like to see, you know, maybe not the next several months or so, a presentation on how are we going to address the food issue district-wide. And all holds, you know, no holds barred type of everything's on the table. Are we to ship it out to have a vendor do it for us, or we keep it in-house? I've been on the board for 12 years, and it has not improved, and it's improved somewhat. I'm not going to tell you it hasn't, but it's been a recurring problem, and for the last, since I've requested that, the board requested that we have these surveys from the students, every year we've heard these issues on it, and it doesn't seem to be, and granted, it may not be completely documented, but at least we're hearing it from the kids, because these student surveys coming back are...
We're in the process of completing a food survey, and so in the next couple of weeks, we can definitely bring that forward with results and discussion on that.
And we don't want him in the...
No, the survey is going ongoing right now. It started last week, and we sent out, we looked at the percentage of responses, and we sent out a notice requesting campus principals to continue encouraging them to do it. So I would say by March, you will be getting a results of the survey and definitely considerations, discussions of options we can look at.
No good things about the board.
maybe the next ask. Year survey we
didn't
can,
ask.
We didn't ask.
Both so scoundrels.
But no, it says district leaders are honest and trustworthy. It does.
Does it
on
mean
page
that?
Three.
Sure.
If it doesn't, we'll just say it.
Sounds like
talking
us.
About the did
I'm pretty the, sure they're talking about the
administration.
So this basically was completed by district employees, no students. It was all district employees. And so then hopefully we get it done next year also. Before I move on, I just want to let you know that the staff, well, the people here in the office, the boardroom tonight, the HR personnel committee was invited. Marta Gidek participates in the HR personnel committee as Kathy Ellis, as Dr. Marisa Garcia, myself, and Ms. Brito, who is, I guess, flying in. So she said she'd probably be here a little bit late. And then, of course, Mary Alice and Juana handle in my office the secondary and the elementary staff. So I thought it'd be prudent for them to be here and listen to the information that Ms. Kirk will be presenting this evening. And so having said that, if there's no other questions, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Kirk. And I do want to say that as she's presenting the report, please keep in mind that what is in the staffing report are recommendations.
Just if I might, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just real quick, I noticed there was a lot of comments, and I guess it was revolving more about the high school and the scheduling. are we going to be looking at that situation that talks about like certain classes, looking at making sure that we try to group those individual students so that way we could provide the instruction more centered instead of going from one end to the other end?
We are getting ready to set up our needs assessment, and in doing that, I know that Mr. Basulto has worked with the secondary campuses in helping them get their master schedules in. They're going to work on them early, and at least we're going to have a draft when we come to needs assessment here in a couple of weeks. And so they are, the class offerings, all of that, and I know that Dr. Valariz has had some of those discussions. So that is, once we get those master schedules up, at least maybe even in draft, and you know, they can provide some input to you on that. So anyway, as I was saying, on the staffing report, just keep in mind that this was taken, it's like a snapshot in time. And at that point in time, she's making recommendations. By no means is it anything that we absolutely have to do. There are recommendations moving forward with some cost-saving ideas that should we choose to implement. And all of that information that's in there certainly are ideas that we can incorporate in some instances during our staffing, our needs assessment. When we sit down with the campuses and the departments, I mean, we will be using some of that information and, of course, any of your input that you have to offer this evening. Ms. Kirk?
Okay.
Turn it over to you.
If you don't mind, I think I'll probably sit most of the time. But so, first, I want to say thank you very much for having me in the district. It's been quite a pleasure. I love this area. I've never been to El Paso. The mountains are breathtaking. That's the first thing I noticed, and I had to drive through them the last time I was here, and they were just beautiful. But I've enjoyed working with all the staff. They were gracious. You have every reason to be very proud of them. And Martha has been a wonderful host to me and helping me. And I know I have about driven her crazy with 9,000 emails asking for little pieces of information. And also her assistant, Carlos, was very, very helpful. So thank you for having TASB and myself in the district. I appreciate it so much. And it's been a wonderful pleasure getting to know your district. As Martha said, this is kind of, think of it like all the other things that go in, team snapshots, accountability snapshots. This was a snapshot in time in your district, in your staffing, where you were. I was here in the first week of October, I believe it was, yes, October. And this is where you stood. Things are fluid, you know that. There were vacancies at that time that probably have now been filled, and maybe at the time there were staff members that have now left, and you have other vacancies. So I try to step back and say this is like a 30,000 foot picture and not a picture right underneath the microscope. But it does provide you with some details. It provides you some information just so that you as the board can start looking at how do our personnel resources stack up and where do we want to spend our personnel resources? How are they aligned or attached to your goals for the students here and the needs of the students? So this gives you an idea. And especially after what we call TASB, the Great Depression of 2010 to 2013, when all the districts had to become basically anorexic and they went down to skeleton staff, and things have been so difficult during that time period. In many districts like yourself, I know that you reduced staff in 2010 after the other TASB report at that time. Now districts are saying, okay, we feel like we might can breathe a little bit. Maybe money's a little bit more stable now. And where are we? Where are our places that we need to shore up? And where are we still maybe a little on the heavy side to just balance that? Because everybody realizes your resources are very precious and you need to spend them very wisely. So that whole purpose is to look at it. And not so much as, okay, you're overstaffed here, you're overstaffed there, cut, cut, cut. That's not the purpose. It's just to look at, okay, we have a healthy personnel situation here, but maybe a little bit on the skimpy side over here. And it gives you the knowledge so that you can go forth and make some decisions. And like Martha said, they're just recommendations, or you can like put them, what I said, in that file 13. But hopefully it'll give you some information to make some educational decisions. You have the report. I hope you've had the opportunity to go over it. I'm going to kind of hit the highlights and... Yes.
Just real quick, I know you're comparing, Madam Chair, if I might, and I know you're comparing us to other areas as it relates to, let's say, you know, the state budgets and what was happening to us. I guess we were able to, breathe a little bit once we passed our TRE, and so in comparison to other districts, we were able to have more ability to, you know, hire the staff that we needed in comparison. How did you look at that is a question.
Well, when we look at the information, we have a data bank, we call it the Common Practice in Texas. And in that, it's the information at TASB that we compile from all districts in terms of their staffing, how they're staffed at their districts. So you have a compilation of districts who passed TREs and who were breathing a little easier, as compared to districts who didn't and were really struggling. It comes out and gives you an overall average. And so when we look at the data and compare you, one, we compared you to a specific set of districts that Martha gave me to run the information against. And then we compare you to what we call the common practice in Texas, which is all the districts and their staffing. And then we also compare you to what the information says in the PEAMS and the AEIS report and what the state's saying and what the state average is in some of those areas. So we factor in all of those areas. We don't factor out districts that, and we did not compare you just to districts that passed a TRE, let me say, or didn't pass a TRE.
Well, I'm saying if you were to compare us to the average, you would notice that, yeah, we might look a little bit more on the heavy side, but the fact that we were able to pass a TRE allowed us to breathe a lot better than
sure.
other districts. And so that mm-hmm. might be, not necessarily skewed, but it might be a different, looking at it.
And like I was explaining to Martha earlier, If you are overstaffed in comparison to the state or other districts, that's okay. There's not a law against that. There's nothing wrong with that. That might be a focused area of need in your district or something you as the board and the superintendent have chosen to be that way. This is just giving you a snapshot. Here's how you look in the state of Texas.
Because I was just looking at, and the reason why is I was looking at, you know, the cost savings, and that's pretty much what we actually pumped back in once we passed the TRE, and so that allowed us to actually put us at the level we would need to. One question, and then, so I guess we're both on the same page, but I just wanted, to air that out. And then the other question I have here, when you're looking at data sources, we had talked about it, is there a reason, I guess I was looking at all the executive directors, and I know for sure one is missing one of the curriculum. Is there a reason why that wasn't a data source, or why not that?
When we look at the information for staffing, we're not looking at programs like your curriculum programs. We're looking at how you're staffing your campuses, and then we look at how you staff your overall administrative professional category, which I'll get into when I go through here. We had all the information we need. The people that I interviewed when I was here in the district, it was for the purposes of clarifying some of the information I had received. I needed to really make sure I understood how the master schedule at the high school ran. You know, so I interviewed every principal. And then in special education, you have to understand exactly the programs, because in districts all around, programs can be called different names. You've got to understand what is it that this means when they say life skills or something of that nature. So that's why some people were interviewed and some people aren't. Certainly, any recommendations that would have been made, I would have been happy to interview them. But what I'm saying is from the projection of looking at staffing patterns at the campuses, and so forth, it's not necessarily needed. It's not that those people are not important. I don't want to indicate that by any means. But in looking at for the purposes of this study, I had all the information that I needed from the HR department.
Okay, I just want to make sure, because then when we go into some of the staffing recommendations, it included like the instructional, what was it? The instructional
aids?
Yeah, the instructional aid. And so I guess I'll let you go first, and then okay. Maybe I'll just wait toward
okay.
My answer throughout.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
We kind of already talked a little bit about the data that and what we used to begin this study. In doing the visit to the district, I was here for a couple of days and then had numerous conversations, phone calls, and emails to collect more information and clarify. And then, you know, we also, like I said, compare you within the information inside PIMS and the AIS reports. So that's some of the foundational pieces as we start looking at this. And as you look at this, there are several ways to look at this information. Some districts are needing to recoup some costs. I don't think necessarily that is the position that I understand that you're in, but you want to know how your personnel dollars are being spent. So, like I said before, when you see something where you might be over in comparison to others, that's okay. That might be a decision that you knowingly want to keep that way. And then when you might not realize that you were understaffed in some areas and perhaps because of a growing population within your district. And so that's something that you need to keep in the forefront as well. When I looked, I'll start with the teacher categories. When I looked at the elementary teachers, you have some class size waivers right now, so you're a little short on elementary teachers, four to be exact, for your exact population you had in October. And you had two extra at other campuses that, I was telling Martha, for next year, if those trends stay the way they are, they could be transferred to those campuses to provide some relief. And then it appears, based on the population size you have now in your elementary ranks, you would need a couple more teachers so that then you could be off of class size waivers at that point. So elementary is always pretty cut and dried when it comes to that because of the 22-to-1. It's easy to look at and analyze in that area. In secondary, it's a little bit different. Your secondary campuses, overall, we look at several averages. We look at your core class averages. We look at your fine arts and other elective averages, your CTE averages. We also look at an overall encompassing and average. And, of course, to make sure you understand, these are what we call theoretical averages because in no world does it ever come out perfectly that you're going to have that averaged number of students in every class. Because of scheduling, there's going to be fluctuations. But when we give you a theoretical average, that's on the most part, that is what your class sizes should are averaging or at the time that I took the information. The overall average is slightly below the state average. So what I provided you with in the data charts would be if you wanted to absorb some teacher positions at the secondary level, it tells you up to so many positions what that would save you in money or what it would cost you, basically, if you keep those positions in play. And again, there's nothing wrong with having lower class size averages than others. If you can maintain that financially, that's commendable because we all know the smaller the class sizes, usually the students do better. But this is information for you to have and to once again utilize as you move forward with your staffing. In the high school, the master schedule, I know somebody mentioned something about the scheduling earlier. They're running what we call a traditional 7-6 schedule, which is the most economical and efficient schedule to run in a high school. I'm not saying it's the most liked. It's the most efficient and economical schedule to run. And that's the schedule they're running at this point from that aspect. whether they like it or not, that will come from Martha's surveys on whether they like that kind of schedule. But they are running that type of schedule. Your middle schools are running a little bit different configuration of a 5-4 schedule, and that's a little more costly than your traditional 7-6 schedule. Wanted to point that out. The in terms of the assistant principals and counselors, in assistant principals, you're understaffed in that area. You have a couple of campuses that are slightly overstaffed, but all in all, if you wanted to come to the state level, what the state average is, you would need to hire 1.5 FTEs of an assistant principal to be at the state average. I think most of the impact of large loads is felt at your middle schools, but also at three of your elementaries that have some large loads. So I broke it down in the report for you to look at the average caseload each assistant principal has at the high school versus middle school versus elementary. And you can see that. Now, granted, at secondary, assistant principals usually have more duties and more responsibilities than an elementary assistant principal, so an elementary assistant principal can typically handle a few more students, but still in all, when you look at the discrepancies and then compare you to the state average and the common practice in Texas, and please keep in mind the common practice has been significantly reduced in Texas, you're still under that. So, and that I did hear that from the principals when I interviewed with them, that they said they're, everybody's working, everybody wants to work, everybody's working hard, they just don't feel like they can all get it done in terms of the administrative responsibilities and some additional help in that area. The data kind of supports that feeling for them. I do think you could do some shifting around to make it a little more equitable, and then if you had the resources to hire some a little bit additional help in that area. In counseling, it's more of redistributing the counseling help so it's a little more equitable across the campuses. And then you were just slightly over. If you redistribute, then you were just like a half of a counselor over. I would tell you that's negligible. Don't worry about that. But I would look at maybe reassigning or distributing the resources a little differently to provide some backup and some assistance at some of those larger campuses. When we looked at the library and the clinic models, I want to say this is informational purposes for you. There are no mandates in Texas about you have to have a librarian at, you know, per so many students. The same with RNs. There's not that mandate. And so when districts were faced with some financial issues, they started seeking, in 2010 when we were doing some of these studies, they started seeking some alternatives. So we always provide district with alternatives. What is your model now? What if you wanted to look at different models, here's what it could save you. So a lot of districts, many, many districts in the state, in their libraries, went to more centralized librarians with librarian aides at the campuses. And so because of the difference in the pay scales and so forth, that's naturally where you would save some money. And then the same kind of the same philosophy with the clinics. You all have the traditional model that we used to have an RN at every campus. Many districts have gone to centralized RNs and LVNs at the campus. And then an RN can supervise up to 5 LVNs. So you can kind of look at that as that's the ratio we use. That's what their licensure says that they can do. So that provides you another model. Again, it is just for informational purposes. There's not a thing wrong with keeping a librarian at every campus and nothing wrong with keeping an RN at every campus. It's solely based on if you would like to know what other state, you know, what other districts in the state are doing and where they're curbing some costs. This is a couple of areas. In the area of clerical staff, instructional aides, non-campus clerical staff, you were slightly over. It's not real significant. It was four positions at central administration, four and a half out at the campuses in terms of clerical, and then five instructional. Again, you may have needs that are specific that these positions are addressing, and so this is a comparison to what we're seeing in the state. The area of special education, though, the instructional aides and special education, you were not over in that area. You were under in that area. And that is more in the special ed area as I get to that. There's a big category that we look at, and it's called the professional administration support. And in that category are things like the central office administrators, nurses, librarians, counselors, diagnosticians, athletic trainers, athletic directors, curriculum specialists, technology specialists. It's a huge category that the state of Texas puts everybody else in, basically. And when we come out to look at your administrative staff, whether it's at the central administration or your support staff that's out there on the campuses, we have to look at it from that elevated view, from that big category, for the simple reason that every district in the state of Texas organizes their central office differently. And I'll give you an example, HR. And I've been an HR administrator in more than one district, and everywhere I've been, it's been different. Sometimes HR is standalone by itself as its own department. Sometimes it's in finance as part of the finance department. And sometimes it's in the superintendent's office. And so because there are no true ways of how a central office should be structured, that's at the discretion of the superintendent and the school board, how you're structuring. We don't compare individual departments. We compare the category of administrative professional support. And so for that reason, it's a huge area. It's a big, sizable area. Now, in that, you were over in comparison to the state and to some of your peers that we looked at. I think part of the reason you might be over is that you still have librarians and RNs at every campus, and they're in that count. And like I said, I would venture to say the majority, at least three-fourths of the districts, have moved away from that. So that will elevate your numbers somewhat. As far as the rest of why you're over in that area, it could be because you have needs. You need instructional specialists at the campuses. You've decided to focus on that. But this just gives you information that, yes, this is an area that's a little bit elevated in comparison to the others.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a list as to who you put on the campus administration and on the central administration?
Like the positions? I can give you the positions.
Yeah, I'm asking for the positions.
If you look on page...
Are they reporting on?
Look on page... Okay, if you look on page... First off, let me show you. If you look on page 6 in the third paragraph, it lists those positions for you in that category, professional support. It lists the majority of those positions in there. Now, as far as how many you have in those positions, I pull that information directly off of your PEAMS reports. And we look at, that is the chart, I think it's page 22. If you look at page 22, right, then you have those positions. These numbers are coming directly from your PEAMS that you have submitted to the state of Texas. They were not my counting.
Going back to April 2010, it listed, not the name, but the title, the central office. You just put central administration, 14 in 2012-2013. We don't have positions listed. And I'm curious to find out who they are.
Okay, in the positions under central administration?
Yes, ma'am.
Those positions, your PEAMS coordinator here would be able to tell you exactly who she reports in that. Most of the time, that's going to be your superintendent, assistant superintendents or associates, and your executive directors. Most of the time, that's going to be in that category. What I take is, this is how they've reported your information every year to Texas, to the state. And so, in comparison, it shows you in central administration, these are the numbers that were turned in. Your PEAMS coordinator could give you the specific names.
We'll put it in tomorrow's packet.
Did that help? Did that answer your?
Yes, and the campus administration.
That's the principals and assistant principals on campus administration. And you can see that's the one I was saying is the only area that's technically under the state average. State average is 3.7 per 1,000 students. And for this year, you're at 3.5. Last year, you're at 3.2. And for your information, we do that per 1,000 students so we can put everybody on the same playing field and level it out to have a fair comparison. And I think there had been a question about the social worker category on this, that you didn't have a social worker, but I was discussing with Martha, you have some kind of person working in some capacity like that, and that's where your PEAMS coordinator has reported that person. I don't know who it is personally, but this is what's in the books. So it may not be an actual official name of social worker, but maybe it's an at-risk person or something of that nature. And it was reported that way. Okay. And like I said before, if you're slightly over, there's no law against that. I mean, you consciously choose. From this point, so you might choose that that's the way you need to focus your energies to address your needs here in the district with the students' needs and academic goals. In special education, there are a couple of concerns. We look at your identification rate of special education students in the district, because that directly ties to personnel. I mean, the more students you have, the more specialized teachers you have to hire. And CISD had been doing really well in matching and being very, very close to the state required identification rate. And then this year, in looking at the data that I had in October from Mr. Chambers, you've made an upswing and you're over-identified at this point. And pretty significantly, I'm not talking a couple of percentage points. I mean, you jumped on up there into the 9%, I'd have to go back to it, maybe 9.7%. So that is of great concern because the state will expect you to keep your identification rate where they say they want it, which is like 8.4, 8.5. There could be several reasons for that. Martha and I have talked. It's very common sometimes for the special education population, when a district is growing, to get here before the rest of the population does, if that makes sense. Because this area, I know, is embracing a lot of change and a lot of growth and a lot of things being built up and developed around here. And typically, your special education parents are going to be real proactive in seeking those things out. You've had a good reputation in this district, And believe me, the Advocate Network and the Grapevine through Special Needs Parents is very solid, and they do keep each other informed in that. One of my old jobs was a special ed director, and so I know that Grapevine as well in Texas. And so that could be part of the cause in terms of that jumping and being so high. Another thing, it never hurts to review the systems you have in place in regards to special education. One of the required systems is the Response to Intervention, or the RTI program, and that is the intervention program to be utilized in regular ed prior to a student being tested for special education. So it does not hurt to review that program, that process, see if there's any weak links in it, or there are, or more training needs to happen to shore it up, to make sure it's functioning at 100% efficiency that you want it to be functioning at. So those are a couple of things I would like to point out that I think would be valuable for the district to look at, so that you can continue the reputation you have, and you have a really happy set of parents. I can tell you that, for the fact that you haven't had any hearings in the past 3 years, and probably longer. So that is excellent for most districts. I would also do a review of an internal kind of audit or review of IEP progress on the students. When I look at your numbers, you are significantly understaffed in teachers and in the special education aides as compared to the others in the district, in the state. So the best barometer, that might be okay for you because the programs you have in place may be being highly successful and you have very, very creative teachers. But the best way to look at that is to compare on about a 3-year run the IEP progress of students you've had in the program that long. Are they getting the growth and the progress that they really need and should have? Or are we just barely scraping by because the burdens are so large? And then the other area would be an assessment personnel. You know, there's a lot of significant federal timelines and so forth that have to be met, and that can cost you compensatory services if they're not met. And so the assessment loads for your diagnosticians and speech pathologists are larger than the average in the state. And they may be very comfortable with that, but it deserves a look at to see, are you missing deadlines or not because of the loads? If you're not, you may be able to run like you're running. But as your district grows, keep in mind that's going to be an area to really keep an eye on. In nutrition, I didn't evaluate the taste of the food, so I'm just going to say I didn't go do that. But efficiency, you had some campuses that are running real, real efficient, and others that are close to it, and others that can improve. My biggest concern, or the thing that jumped out at me the most, was I would take a look at how to increase your attendance in the breakfast program, because you're only running about 54% are taking advantage of the free breakfast. And so we all know kids do better if they have good nutrition. So I would just encourage you maybe to work on looking at some creative ways of trying to entice those kids to eat breakfast for you, and improve that participation rate for that. Yeah, yeah.
I implemented a breakfast on the go or to go, either November or December, but I can follow up with them as well. Mm-hmm. We can look into it.
See, and that might change the whole face of this percentage, you know, just by doing the breakfast on the go thing. So.
They don't worry. And Madam Chair, I'd like to ask a question also. What about the prorated reimbursement? Could you speak to that, of utilities, property, casualty insurance for our student nutrition program?
Okay, can you tell me what page?
Yeah, it's on a couple of them, but 13 is a good, it's the last paragraph.
Okay, in some districts, they do not charge the food service department for utilities, say, mm-hmm. or they do not charge them for the general maintenance of their equipment. So if they can increase their revenue, you know, then that's something where maybe you can, if you're providing some free services to them, basically, then you could recapture some of that because they're generating more revenue and can pay for those things themselves.
Precisely.
So
we do prorate utilities. We do prorate their utilities.
Do we prorate their property casualty insurance cost?
It's funded. Is it funded out of the service?
No.
We can look at it.
And their equipment replacement?
They have. They fund and they maintain all their equipment.
And salary increases?
It's all funded out of the service. So the insurance is the only item that we
squeeze and maybe get a
nickel. So we always encourage you to keep looking at these areas and keep doing that to see.
Absolutely.
How much longer do you think we'll get free and reduced lunch? 100%.
I know that we're up for provision too. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. For the review, it's the spring. And so I can give you another.
And how long does that last?
It's a 4-year program, isn't it?
Every 4 years?
Yeah.
So that will keep us in there.
So we make it one more round, we'll cover for another 4 years.
But can we, let's say 4 years from now, and this is just long term, can we subsidize whatever the federal, would that be costly or no?
The difference? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And I will say, when I spoke with your director, she is concerned about that. Because right now, I think she's barely making enough money to cover the cost of the ones that are not actually free and reduced. However, your population has lowered a little bit. And so that means there's a larger amount for you to cover from the district if you're going to continue doing the 100%. So she was quite concerned about that.
Well, I mean, it might be a selling point to those parents because it's probably going to be developer to say, hey, subsidize it instead of you having to bring your parent.
If we're not free and reduced our provision to, we can't code it in the general operating. We have to put it in the special revenue category.
So no longer be part of the board. You know how the board, you approve the local funds and the federal, the food service program? That's where it would become then a special revenue.
So we would have to fund it out of special revenue.
That would become, let me look into it.
So, I mean, it's just something to look at long term, I think, because.
Basically, the premises of provision to be making money.
This past, I don't know, it was a week ago or something, there was a student that couldn't pay for it.
In Utah.
Yeah.
And what happened?
They threw, the child had
took
been serving a plate of food, and the staff realized that the parent owed money. Apparently they put money on a lunch cart. And so the staff went and took the child's food from the child and tossed it.
Special.
They did say they got apples. They gave them an apple or something.
That's cruel.
I mean, just to look at long term, maybe those.
Looking at, I think what you're getting at is equity and parity that students don't feel more and some students don't feel less. Is that?
Well, I mean, if we're able to subsidize them, let's say it's minimal, if it's a large cost, might be something when you look at it. Let's say if it's a couple, I don't know, maybe 5,000 per campus, and you can tell the parents, hey, we'll charge you, but would you prefer us to subsidize it overall? Mm-hmm. So it's.
I just don't want our kids to ever feel different. So you get the free lunch. Why don't I get to buy lunch? Vice versa. I don't want.
And what if somebody forgets her card one day, or what if somebody, what do you do?
Yeah, lunch on the fees.
I mean, if that's something we'll have to deal with the community, it's like, we want to make sure everybody has a plan, that it's not going to hinder,
Every kid gets to eat.
And in Boston, they provide dinner, I think. Mm-hmm. Remember we were done?
I think in Michigan they provide weekends. They send you home with a backpack of food for the
week. Even in Texas, the conference that we went to, there's some districts that have after-school programs, and they've worked it into where they're providing these kids not only with a snack, but an evening meal. That stay with you know, the different sports activities and that kind of thing, tutoring, and they all seem to qualify in there for the free and reduced lunch. So,
do you have an after school, like if we have extra duty tutoring, we do provide snacks, and then if we have Saturday school, dependent on the number of hours that the Saturday school is scheduled, they are qualified for a breakfast and a snack.
Oh, good.
Or a snack and a lunch.
Thank you.
I'm sorry?
Four apiece.
If the campus is more than that instead.
Oh, thanks. Sounds.
But as far as the food service program goes, we are able to provide that type of
I was really surprised when to hear that a lot of the schools in the Rio Grande Valley.
And then to the last area we looked at was the operations facilities. This is what you know as maintenance or custodial. And at the time I was here, there were several vacancies. And I noted that, and you'll see that in the report. That's why it looks like you're understaffed. I think some of those vacancies were posted but just hadn't been filled yet. So I'm quite sure the face of this has changed somewhat. Since I've been here, but we do, it gives you the information of what you should look at like as a district according to the standards of the Association of Physical Plants. And so I'm sure Martha can inform you in terms of if there's some positions that have been filled since I've been here in those areas. Now, on your custodians, you were slightly over. Again, if you look at it, if you start redistributing them, it's like moving a person to job share, a couple of campuses. It may not be beneficial in that area. It may be very hard for you to keep custodians if they have to start splitting their campus assignments. So that's something. You were barely over in that area, so that would be something to consider, you know, just leaving be. But now, I went through a lot of just the highlights, and I would love to be able to answer any questions, hopefully, that you may have, any additional questions.
Just real quick, Dr. Bellamy, I was going to ask, a lot of the stuff that we've been discussing, and once we put out the five-year plan, we're going to see an increase, you know, especially like in Huntington's department, bilingual ed, we're going to see increases in certain areas, maybe science, if we go STEM. Are we looking at that long-term, and what are we?
And that's part of tomorrow's discussion as we start our strategic plan for 5 to 10 years.
You mean like tomorrow, or like?
Tomorrow. And, you know, we have the vision and the mission of our being the best, but what do we want to be the best at? Is it like the workforce solution, just put out a big STEM initiative throughout the region? Is it, you know, that biliteracy? So really looking at our needs assessment, and we're looking, today at DAC we have all the budget priorities, and we're looking at how we're spending and why we're spending. Is that the direction that we're going as a district, as the board says, the vision?
I brought this back. Armando and I were in Washington, and this is hot off the press. Ms. Aguita, you might want to hear this. Funding levels for Title I grants to school districts, special ed, and other education programs are going to be at or near their pre-sequester levels before the budget cuts were made. So we're going to get more money.
We were cut very short. I think it was 5%, but we can always
use that. And I'm thinking of the special ed pieces that we're not quite getting. The funding bill is going to restore $1.3 billion that was cut from Title I and special ed, which, you know, we're not getting that whole amount, as you know.
Right.
But we're going to get something.
Some of it. That's good.
And Race to the Top has been funded at $250 million.
Is that still going through the state?
Uh-huh. And then there's another $90 million for school safety under safe and drug-free schools.
Are they going to redo? Because we don't have safe and drug-free school grants.
They're bringing it back?
Then they're bringing it back. Okay.
That's something we need to look at, because that was, right, the security cameras and all, we could probably have them pay for
exactly
a portion of that.
And
for the last 2 years, we haven't had.
Yeah, I think
that
was 2 years ago.
The Race to the Top, it says, may be used for competitive awards to states to develop, enhance, or expand high-quality preschool programs, early childhood education programs for children from low and moderate family incomes, including children with disabilities. So maybe once again, help our special ed deficit.
I know that when they brought it back a few years back, it was up to the
local.
The state, the governor, to mm-hmm. accept it before we could.
Precisely. Yes.
And they did.
And he didn't accept it.
Yeah.
So hopefully this time around,
that
maybe it's a different sentence. Yeah,
it was raised to the top.
Our governor has a problem with educating kids.
I think he's got a problem with taking federal funds, because it takes away the local control, is what they were getting at. But we still sure need that money.
Yes. I mean, as constricting as the entitlements are and compliance and all that, you know, it funds at least 50 of our positions.
Sure.
It covers for a lot of our extra supplemental programs that we give our students. It's money we desperately need. And so even if it does have those federal ties, I agree with that. Yes.
Absolutely. So I thought that, you know,
it's good to know. Thank
with
you.
The special ed issue, and that we're talking after school programs as well, maybe we'll get a little crumb.
I know Ms. Brigham and Ana Zuniga are at the Title I conference in San Diego. They're coming back. So hopefully they have more information that'll help us.
This was, hot off the press. This has just happened. Like, 2 days ago, maybe. So.
Lori got an email.
I did.
Well, that's a good thing, because our enrollment in our special ed, the students, is increasing. And in personnel committee this afternoon, and Mr. Chambers was, with the increase, I think it's appropriate, the increase in aides, because the students that we're getting are, more wheelchair bound and feeding tubes. And so those are the type of things that, we will need to look at increasing the personnel on the special ed side.
Just real quick, if I might, Madam Chair. The conference was really good when it comes to both the MOSBA and NSBA, but when you look at NSBA and what's actually happening, whether it's a threat on public ed, but advocating and the advocacy that we need to start doing is good. I also met with both our congressmen, our congressman and our neighboring congressman, both of them, Pete Gallegos and Beto O'Rourke. And so afterwards, I also met with his chief of staff for a while and just talking to him. It's like, hey, let us know when certain issues when it comes to our legislative stuff, so that way we can look at it and push it. And so, once we get our new legislative person, and for the staff too, once you start seeing, okay, what happened in the past, what funding did we get that we didn't, whether it was a control.
I already have one for your list.
Yeah, and so that all needs to start brainstorming for the new person, and then for the board too, so we could create our legislative agenda saying at the federal side, hey, Bethel, this is what we need when you're looking at, you know, HR5 and where we want local control, that you could include this, try to, whatever it may be, that, so that way we include on the federal side. We're familiar with the state, but I think a lot of the money comes on the federal. So we need to just start brainstorming what used to happen in the past, what legislation really has hampered us or what, and so that way we could create our legislative agenda. And so when we go the following year with our congressman, it's like, look, this is a detail that you need to look at when you're looking at this bill, or this is what needs to be looked at. So hopefully we could get more advocacy in that area and hopefully get that back to the district.
I wanted to go back, I'm sorry, to the, you know, she made a comment about we have over a lot of reported our special ed students. Our population is fairly large. And I just wanted to note or mention to you all, we just purchased the E-Star, which I'm sure you all are familiar with. And Mr. Chambers was sharing with us today that, you know, the identification, their IEP, the way they are able to identify these students or catch any discrepancies on, is this student truly, you know, is the IEP telling us we should have exited? You know, all those things are going to be better identified with this software. He says it's better than he expected it to be. And so it's good. It's also working for the bilingual LEP program. And so I think it'll be very beneficial to us in the way we're reporting and ensuring that our kids are coded correctly. Because obviously when we're over-reporting on sped students, it's
going to
affect us. So just wanted to share that information with you. You were
going to
say something?
I was. I shared it with Dr. Galmachis, Armando found this out too. Through the National School Boards Association, they will give us grant funding abilities for free. They'll train our people. We can go online, use their I guess their template. They will send us all the things that are applicable specifically to us.
Like webinars?
No, for grants.
Oh, grant.
Yeah, like here are all the grants that y'all can use. You know, they're not going to be the same ones that they can use. These are just special for you. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal. It's the first time we've ever had something like this, and we have forever had such an issue with grant writer.
Yes.
Everybody knows that now we have a tool that we can tap into and maybe make a big difference. Because, gosh, we're eligible for everything, it seems like, but we're not able to complete the circle, so this has got to help.
And you said that was through NSU?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On their website, Dr. Galavis has the name, and it's up and running and ready to go.
I'll be there again in April.
Mm-hmm.
This one was pretty, like, just specific, you know, legislative and advocacy. And that's pretty much what we're going to have to do is advocate for public ed, because of a lot of threats when it comes to tier and people wanting to.
Any more questions? Anybody else?
I have a comment.
Ms. Patsy?
As you all know, Armando and I and went to the NSBA conference along with Adrian. And I just wanted to let you all know that Armando was elected to the MASPA Board of Directors. Four-year term?
Three-year term.
Because we were surprised. But I know you're glad.
We're going to advocate at a different level.
What's your position?
Board of Directors.
Board of Directors.
There's six, and then there's an executive committee. So I hear there's a TASB Board of Directors.
So now it's not just the valley that's going to be represented.
Right.
Yeah.
West Texas.
That was an interesting meeting.
The real West Texas.
The real Chihuahuas.
I'm sure I need to get a Chihuahua hat.
I know.
You got to choose that, man.
Oh, they did?
Yes, they did. Got the jersey.
Thank you all. College is here. Fun in the Mexican Association of School Boards, just to see the least.
We work the room boy.
I think the room worked us first.
What happened in Mazda space?
In Mazda. I think this is wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
I learned a lot. I appreciate what, you know, that it looks like you dug into every nook and cranny and gave us options, but no direction. I really appreciate
just,
it. Here's
it's
what it
food
is.
For thought. And,
yeah,
there you go.
You could pick, you could choose, or you mm-hmm. could take no action.
Right.
I appreciate that. He's really good job done.
Thank you.
And your staff.
Yeah.
And as I said, this information is going to be useful when we go through the needs assessment process, and we'll take what we can use and bring it forward.
It's also very helpful as a personnel committee when, you know, requests come, you know, forward, and you have to be able to justify the positions and be fair about it, and so when you have best practices and numbers and you know, standards that are set already for you, that helps us make the best decision and who, you know, what's granted and what's said. Let's think about it again, you know, revisit.
Salary schedule comes next?
This will be 2 out of 3, so the next one will be the compensation. So that one. Well, we've done, I contracted with TASB, as in previous years, for the maintenance. Remember we did that overhaul of restructuring our pay structures, and so now what we've done is that we've contracted with them every year, or we did it last year for the first time. We did it again this year, where they're going to come in and look at our pay structures. And what they did, it's called maintenance of the pay structures, and what they did last year, they adjusted the pay ranges a little bit. And then of course we came back with the proposals to the board based on our budget, you know, what our pay increases would be for this year. So again, we're going to run the same exercise again for this year, and depending on our pay structure and depending on, well, on our budget, and depending also, we're going to try and incorporate some of the things that are in here. Look at those instructional aids, look at, you know, some of those recommendations that were made to see what we can do to tweak our pay structure.
When did the program start, Martha? That project?
What project?
The maintenance part of it.
What we've done, we've already sent the pay files it's already started.
Okay.
So now when they come in, and of course I haven't gotten with you to let me know what my allowance is. And so once you give me that, then we can go ahead and move forward. I know she's coming in with some different ideas that we've had in the past, and so I want to see what she's going to bring to the table and what we're going to do with that.
And only, my question is, so that to help the budget process as it moves along, if we could get that adopted early May so that we can start entering those positions and actually run, you know, the numbers to provide the board with actual, you know, a good picture of that would be very beneficial. But I guess you and I can talk and go from there.
Anybody?
No.
Is that it?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Lisa?
Adjournment time, 7:48.
Hey, hey.
We're coming in towards the end of the month.
They've got some new people in the compensation. And Patton and Randolph Patton.